Welcome. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup. And we're coming to you live tonight from a very, very cold Washington, D.C. that's going into basic lockdown mode, just 3 days away now from the inauguration of Barack Obama as the 44th president of the United States. And when I say that the nation's capital is in lockdown, this is unprecedented. Seven bridges over the Potomac River from the District of Columbia into Virginia are going to be closed to traffic, only open to public transit, buses, and what they call authorized vehicles, which apparently includes limousines for some of these VIPs that are coming into town. We have massive road closures in the district, so it is going to be quite a mess for those of us who live here and work here. We are told that we were told first that there was going to be a couple million people coming into Washington, but I think the weather is going to tamp down those numbers quite a bit. They're talking about the high on Inauguration Day of about 28 degrees with a wind chill factor in the teens. I don't think we're going to see an awful lot of people braving those elements, especially small kids and the older folks. I think they're going to be staying indoors and watching this thing on television, basically. And the show is set to go. I was at the Capitol building yesterday to pick up my own credentials. Amazingly enough, there might be a little change here in Washington. The last two inaugurations, I was basically frozen out, not having anything to do with the weather, but actually the two inaugurations of George Bush, you had to be pretty corporate media or pretty much corporate media or a well-heeled contributor to the Bush and the Republican Party and the Bush campaign to get a decent seat. I have been credentialed. Wayne Mattson Report has been credentialed by the Senate Press Gallery, and if that that may be a little bit of a change, so we'll see. Maybe a little bit of opening up here to the non-corporate media types here in Washington, but I'd say it's a step in the right direction anyway. We've had a lot of news in the last couple of weeks. This assault on Gaza continues. Israel today attacked another UN compound. It's really, really just appalling to see this country, Israel, getting away with war crimes. Finally, we're hearing about war crimes being discussed. This is something that I think the Israelis are going to have to gear up for. Apparently, Ehud Barak, the defense minister, is already preparing a defense strategy for when Israeli military and political leaders are indicted by the International Criminal Court. They should be indicted, they should be put on trial, and if they're found guilty, they should spend the rest of their lives in jail. They're no different than the what happened in the Balkans. The Israelis are no different than the Serbs and the Croatians and the Bosnian war criminals that killed all those civilians. But I think as far as the Israelis are concerned, they think they can get away with it. I hope they don't. And I hope this incoming administration holds these Israeli officials and military officers accountable for their crimes against humanity, because that is what they have done. They have committed crimes against humanity, just like those who were put on trial in Nuremberg, the Nazis, the Japanese war criminals. They are no different, no different whatsoever. And we have international institutions to address issues like that. We will be right back after this break, and we'll talk about that bumper music you're hearing. Okay, we're back from Washington, D.C., a very, very frigid nation's capital this evening. The toll-free number, and we'll get to your calls in just a few minutes, the toll-free number, if you'd like to call into the program, is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. The music you hear as we go into the break and come out of the break is the theme song to the 1960s program, a great program called The Prisoner. And there weren't many episodes, but it starred Patrick McGoohan. Patrick McGoohan, we lost him this past week at the age of 80, a great actor, but he played number six in the place called The Village. He was placed there. He was an intelligence agent, apparently had a fight with the powers that be. I know how that goes. Many people I know realize how that goes. He was placed in the village. He was called number six. He kept trying to escape. Let's listen to just this clip of some of his most famous comments. When we live in this day of George Orwell and all this surveillance technology, this program, and Patrick McGoohan wrote several of those episodes. He deserves a lot of credit for that. Let's listen to this, just a short clip of from the program, The Prisoner.
I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own.
For official purposes, everyone has a number. Yours is number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Six of one, half a dozen of another.
Is this what they did to you? Is this how they tried to break you till they got what they were after?
In your heads must still be the remnant of a brain.
In your hearts must still be the desire to be a human being again.
This is a most serious breach of etiquette.
Well, here you have it, the great show, The Prisoner, the great actor, Patrick McGoohan. Something I didn't know until I read his obituary. Patrick McGoohan was almost considered for the role of James Bond in Dr. No. I wish that had happened. I think he was a much, much better actor than Sean Connery, and he would have been a great James Bond. Although the present James Bond, I have to admit, Daniel Craig, I think the James Bond series are actually coming into their own. I've saw this last one, Quantum of Solace. It looks like it's torn right out of today's newspapers. It's really realistic, and the enemies are much more realistic with the present James Bond movies. But anyway, Patrick McGoohan, great actor. We also lost Ricardo Montalban, who is, of course, known for Fantasy Island, which probably did more to bring back unemployed actors and actresses than any other program in recent memory. That and Murder, She Wrote, but many people remember him as playing the Great Khan in both the Star Trek TV series and also on one of the episodes, and also in the Star Trek movies. A very great actor. I mean, when you compare some of these people in Hollywood who are now leaving the scene to some of these screwballs we have today that join Scientology and Kabbalah movements, there's no comparison. These were great actors, and these nutcases we have running around today don't hold a flame to these great people. Patrick McGoohan, Ricardo Montalban. Anyway, let's go to our first caller. Dave is calling from California. Dave, are you with us?
Hey, Wayne, good to talk to you again.
Good to have you on.
I got two things. One of them is regarding Israel.
Yes.
It's a bit of a theory, but I think it holds water. I think the reason that we're seeing Israel pull out all the stops, and I heard that they've declared a truce or a ceasefire, right, also, by the way, which is good news. But I think the reason they've been pulling out all the stops is because Israel had all of the leaders who are going to be, 90% of them are going to be leaving now with Obama and his new people coming in, had them over the barrel with 9/11. I mean, they had Infosys and Amdocs and all that. They knew exactly what was going to go on 9/11. You know, they warned people about it before it happened. They were there to document the thing. I mean, they had 9/11 down, you know, forward and backward, and all they had to do was tell Georgie and Dickie and all the rest of those guys, you know, hey guys, you know, you need to shut up and do what we say, or we're just going to put the word out what you knew before 9/11 happened. So I'm thinking that maybe they decided to just go ahead and really go for it here at the end while they still had these clowns in power, hoping that maybe Iran would do something dumb and let them go ahead and do whatever it was that they wanted to do over there, and, you know, possibly whatever it is that they want to do, slaughter more people.
Right. Anyway, right. So, and I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. I've actually seen some references in the mainstream media about the fact that Israel may have done this, as you say, before Obama comes in, because we now know that this phone call was, we've heard it from Olmert, the prime minister himself, that Condoleezza Rice helped draft a UN Security Council resolution demanding a ceasefire. She was going to vote for it, make it unanimous. And when Olmert found out about it, he called Bush off of the podium during a speech in Philadelphia and told him that the U.S. could not vote for it, called Condoleezza Rice, and apparently she was embarrassed because she had to abstain on the resolution that she helped draft. And now we have Abe Foxman from the ADL saying, well, Olmert should have never said that because now the cat's out of the bag that Israeli leaders can order U.S. presidents around. Like, that's some sort of state secret. It's really no state secret here in Washington. We know it's been that way for many, many years, but I think you're right. I think they had to, they wanted to pull this off before the change in administrations.
Yeah, and blackmail works a lot better than money in some cases, too, especially about 9/11. I think seems like we're seeing, you know, the new 9/11 in the form of an economic attack, you know, from Britain, sort of coming over here now, and so that's enough to keep everybody stirred up, and hopefully, I guess, the criminals of 9/11 will be allowed to slip into the background or move to Paraguay or something.
Right, right. And now we have these new criminals that are, you know, we've got another guy disappeared, ran an investment fund in Florida, Arthur Nadell, and a guy that jumped out of the airplane and tried to fake his death. This guy Schrenker. We got Madoff still living in his luxurious home in the Upper East Side of Manhattan. I mean, so, you know, if you're an African American in Mississippi and you decide to steal a six pack of beer, you're what, looking at 8 to 10. If you steal $50 billion, or like this guy in Florida that's missing now, $350 million. And the media down in Florida saying, well, his wife's concerned about his health because he called her and he sounded all distraught. And I mean, these people should be hanging for what they've done. I mean, who cares about what they think or how they feel? These are common thieves. These are shysters, and they should be dealt with accordingly.
I agree. And I've got one that could be close to your heart, and then I'll let you go if that's all right.
Oh, sure.
Okay, I've been thinking about how to go after these people, you know, legally, more or less legally, and nonviolently. And one of the ways we can do it is by attacking their fake honor, their fake symbols, and their little fake power trips. And I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Congratulations to the U.S. Navy on commissioning their new aircraft carrier, the USS George Herbert the Pervert Walker Bush. You know, named after an ex-president homosexual child molester. You know,
right.
Oh, boy, I want my kid to go to work on that ship.
Hey, all right. Absolutely. What a disgrace that they named this carrier after that guy. I mean, if it wasn't for the Poppy Bush, we would have never had the idiot son in as president. I mean, what are they going to name after George W. Bush? I'm sure there's going to be some proposals to name something after him, but we've got the CIA headquarters named after Poppy, and now a carrier. As a matter of fact, when you pass the CIA building, the sign says the George Bush Center for Intelligence, and that just seems to be an oxymoron as far as I'm concerned. I don't think intelligence and Bush should be mentioned. At least that kind of intelligence should be mentioned. The kind upstairs shouldn't be mentioned in the same sentence. Anyway, Dave, good to have you with us. Let's go to Rachel, who's calling, I believe, from Los Angeles. At least that's what it says here. Rachel, are you with us?
Yes, I am, and thank you for taking my call. First of all, I've seen you on Press TV on American Dream, and you were great.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Don't mention that. Also, you're talking about, you know, the Israelis bombing another UN building, you know. And the thing is, you know, they're getting a free ride with this administration. And I'm afraid with Obama's administration, it's going to be worse. Because you have to look at his cabinet. You know, I know he gave speeches on hope and all this stuff that you couldn't read between the lines because he didn't really say anything, in my opinion, to say anything with depth. But you have to look at, like, Rahm Emanuel. You
know, absolutely. He's going to be on Meet the Press with David Gregory tomorrow. Ought to be a series of hard hitting questions from a guy like Gregory. He's made no secret about his sympathies for Israel.
Absolutely. Well, he's a son of terrorists. I mean, his parents.
Emanuel, yes. His father was with the Irgun, helped carry out the bombing of the King David Hotel, which killed British Arabs and Jews. You know, this is supposed to be held up as some great freedom fighting force. Well, one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist, and vice versa. If we're going to extol the virtues of Irgun, why can't we extol the virtues of Hamas or Hezbollah? Because they feel that they're doing the same thing, trying to liberate their people.
And you couldn't have said that better.
Rachel, hold on with us after the break. We'll be back right after this short notice.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Manson, a report coming in live from Washington, D.C. And we had have Rachel on with us from Los Angeles. Rachel, if you could hold on, I just want to play this this clip of what happened this past week with the attack by the Israelis using white phosphorus. I want you to listen to this report. This is a report that was on Sky News, and what you're going to hear is that this white phosphorus, this is a terrible, and I'll talk about what this actually does to a person when it hits their skin. But let's listen to this news report out of Gaza this past week.
What appears to have happened is that there have been three hits of what seems to be white phosphorus at one of our buildings. In the compound in our Gaza field office is in flames. You cannot put out white phosphorus with conventional fire extinguishers. You need sand, and we do not have quantities of sand to do that. Three people at least have been injured, and the pallets with which we deliver aid are quite literally on fire. What more tragic symbolism could there be of the situation that UNRWA finds itself in today in Gaza? In addition, there are about five fuel tankers fully laden with fuel in that area. So, tragically, I have to say, the situation is quite literally extremely volatile, which is why we're saying to the Israelis, on the phone in real time, call off the fighting. We've had assurance after assurance from Israelis that our workers would not come into harm's way. And here we have a UN building on fire in Gaza. It's coming on the first day in Israel of the peace mission of the world's top diplomat, Ban Ki-moon. He brings with him the Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire. Ban Ki-moon this morning is the conscience of the world. The world has watched with revulsion at the pictures coming out of Gaza, and indeed the rockets coming out of Gaza to Israel, which of course we condemn. More reasons why the world, the parties on the ground, have to listen to the call of Ban Ki-moon to stop the fighting. It's quite clear, as our building is ablaze in Gaza, from the ground, we can only endorse that message that's coming from the world's top diplomat.
You say that it's, you suspect it's a white phosphorus or white phosphorus shells that have been used here. Now, that's quite an accusation to make, given that the use of these shells is restricted under international law.
Well, it's not the time with our building in flames to discuss the United States international law.
Well, there you have it. There you have it, folks. White phosphorus being used on civilians in a heavily densely populated urban environment like Gaza. I think Rachel, I guess you may have heard that report too. Now, what I want to just say, the U.S. used the same kind of chemical on people in Fallujah in Iraq. The Israelis used it against the people in Lebanon when they attacked that country in 2006. This white phosphorus, which we used to call in the military Willy Peter, when it gets on your skin, it starts to burn. Water won't put it out. It feeds on water, actually. It burns deep into the skin. And the doctors in Gaza were having a terrible time. If you're burned to death, it leaves people horribly disfigured. The corpses look, they're macabre, grotesque, and I believe the Israelis are using this, as we did, because they want people to look at these corpses. They want people, it's a form of psychological warfare operation. It's to shock the population, and as far as I'm concerned, I don't care what the diplomatic or the international law legalities are. That is a war crime, and the Israelis, I believe, people that ordered the use of white phosphorus, as our people did in Iraq, they all need to be brought to justice. But go ahead, Rachel.
I wonder what's keeping it from going to world court. Really?
Well,
it's outrageous.
The deputy foreign minister of Bolivia, which broke relations with Israel this past week, is said they're preparing the necessary paperwork to bring the Israeli leaders to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. He said expect that paperwork to be filed next week. So we do see some activity on that front. Ehud Barak, as I mentioned, is already preparing for a defense strategy for Israeli military officers who may be charged with war crimes. The good thing about any kind of charges being brought, that will restrict these Israelis to their own country. If they hit the wrong country, they're going to be subject to an arrest warrant. Their names, their photos will be put out on Interpol, and they will become wanted individuals. And at the very least, that might send a message to these individuals. It would be nice, of course, to capture them, try them, and if found guilty, put them in prison for the rest of their lives. But that is at least something we can look at in the future. But and hopefully in the near future. But anyway, it was nice to have you on with us, Rachel.
Well, thank you. I just want to say one more thing.
Yes,
real
go ahead.
Quick. My friend James Morris. Well, there's a website called neoconzionistthreat.com. My friend James Morris talks about as confronting Lee Hamilton, what motivated the 9/11 attacks. And by the way, he's indebted to you. He's very thankful. You have given him directions to get the Woodrow Wilson Center from the Metro.
Right. Okay. Well, that's great. Okay.
You remember that?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Absolutely. Yes, yes. Anyway, well, thanks for calling in. And,
thank you.
Yes, thank you, Rachel, for calling from Los Angeles. Let's go to Phil. Let's take this break, and then we'll come back to Phil right after this short break. This is Wayne Madsen from D.C.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. This is Wayne Madsen with the Wayne Madsen Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C., where we're getting ready just 3 days from inaugurating Barack Obama as the 44th President of the United States. We have Phil Turney on the line with us. And Phil, I understand you are a survivor of the USS Liberty, which was attacked by the Israelis during this the Six-Day War back in 1967. Is that right?
Wayne, I don't know if you can hear me, but I'm getting double feedback. I'm going to have to call you back.
Okay. Well, please do, because we really want to talk to you.
Thank you, Wayne. I'll call you right back.
Okay, super. Okay, while we're waiting for Phil to call back in, let's go to Robert, who's been holding on patiently from Colorado. Robert, are you with us?
Yeah, Wayne Madsen, thanks for taking my call. Does your show start 6 o'clock every Saturday, Central Standard Time?
Every Saturday, unless I'm off investigating something, and then you may hear a rerun, but I can assure you that tonight we're live.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm talking to you, so you got to be live. Hey, did you know that Pastor McEwen died a couple days ago?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Yeah, sorry, I had you on speaker. Patrick McEwen, the prisoner,
yes.
You know he died a couple days ago?
Yes, Patrick McEwen, I mentioned we lost him. He died at the age of 80. He was actually started out as a Shakespearean actor, but I think we'll always remember him for this excellent role as playing number six in The Prisoner. I understand that the original British production company, ITV, is actually going to be doing, I guess this year, they're going to be doing a remake of the series, The Prisoner. I just hope that Patrick McEwen was able to have a cameo appearance in at least one of those episodes. But I think he was one of the best actors I can recall. And that series was so ahead of its time. I can think of some, like the movie Network came out in 1976, I believe, was way ahead of its time, where
yep,
TV
yep.
was going to go. And, of course, the Prisoner, again, very much ahead of its time.
Yeah, I'd never even heard of the show until I started listening to your show, but I went on YouTube and did some research. Did you
yes.
know that it was set in a place called The Village? And,
yes, and that's a town called Port Marion in Wales, and I imagine the mayor over there must have declared a state of mourning because there's actually a gift shop in Port Marion that sells village souvenirs. So they made a little bit of money on off of the series, which only
yeah.
I think ran 22 episodes.
Yeah, and according to my research, he not only was a star, he was a producer and a co-creator and helped write the theme song for the show, too. Did you know all that?
Amazing, yes. I know this guy was really one of the best people out of the world of acting we've seen in a long time. I don't think he ever got really the attention he deserved. I know he appeared in a couple of shows. He was also in the movie Braveheart, I understand.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I really wish they would have. I wish he had been selected to play James Bond as in the movie in the James Bond movie Dr. No, because I think that would have given him his just rewards, which I think he was very, very underestimated by the people in Hollywood, and one of the great people, and a great program, a great show. I mean, really, idea of giving people numbers and you lose your identity, and that's what The Village, of course, was all about.
Yeah, and way back then, he was making a whopping $5,000 an episode, which in 1965 was obscene money.
Amazing, amazing. Yes, it is. And but yes, and if you go on YouTube, you can actually see some of the footage from the Prisoner. And I guess we'll just have to wait to see what the remake is like. I understand it's got one of the guys that was one of the actors who was in this Lord of the Rings apparently is going to be appearing in it. But anyway, Robert, great. Thanks for calling in from Colorado, and thanks for letting us remember all about the prison. I'd like Patrick McGill.
No worries. Thanks for your time. See you.
Okay. Now we have Phil Turney. Are you back with us, Phil?
I am. Can you hear me, Wayne?
I can hear you fine. And so I understand you are a survivor of the USS Liberty.
That's correct, Wayne. I sure am. And, listen, I want to thank you for having me on your show at RBN. You're an outstanding radio host, and RBN puts together some of the best people that I know of in the United States and around the world to get this out, get the truth out. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I want to thank you for your service to the U.S. Navy and to the National Security Agency. For people that don't know, the USS Liberty was a Navy ship, but it had a classified mission. It was a signals intelligence ship that carried out missions for the National Security Agency, where I used to work. And the Israelis tried to say it was a mistake, and we know now from many, many different sources that the attack on the USS Liberty was a deliberate attack. The killing of our the survivors by the Israelis was deliberate. I don't think they wanted any survivors. I think you obviously know that more than anyone else, Phil.
That's absolutely, Wayne. They they shot our life rafts out of the water, among many other war crimes. They committed that day, June 8, 1967. They slaughtered 34 Americans, wounded 174 others, and there was over 800 cannon and rocket holes in our ship, tens of thousands of 50-caliber armor-piercing bullets. They dropped napalm on our ship, and as I said before, they shot our life rafts out of the water when a torpedo hit us in the starboard side and blew a 40-by-40-foot hole in our ship.
Right,
and,
right.
The United States government left us out there alone when they knew we were under attack.
Right, right. And I'm glad you called, because I just received some information within the last couple of days that we may have actually retaliated. And I'm going to be looking into this a little bit more. But there was an incident that happened the very next year to an Israeli submarine in that general area. And if what I'm hearing is correct, maybe some patriots in the U.S. Navy, in the U.S. military, decided to get the revenge for what they did to your ship, your shipmates, and the 34 members of that crew who did not make it.
Absolutely, that's interesting news. I'd like to be kept abreast of that. And this morning on the Liberty Hour with Mark Glenn and myself, we had Alistair Cook. He's a MI6 secret operative, or retired now. And we had a great discussion about Israel and what's going on. And also Lady Michelle Renew, a very famous person in England, and civil rights activists. And we were all just dismayed and disheartened by this terrible war that's going on, killing so many civilians and young children in Gaza. And, I just want to kind of to get that word out. And I was surprised to hear there is a ceasefire. I guess one of your callers said there is a ceasefire.
Let's see if it holds. And, the minute Israel breaks that ceasefire, as I mentioned yesterday on Russia Today, the Russian network, this agreement between Condoleezza Rice only has three more days left in office, and we're supposed to believe that this agreement she has with the Israeli foreign minister is going to hold in a very lame duck administration. I'll believe it when I see it, but I think Israel has shown that it likes to thumb its nose at the rest of the world. It ignores UN resolutions, whether they're Security Council or General Assembly. They say that the UN is irrelevant. Well, that's what we used to hear from the likes of John Bolton. But I think we now can identify who these people are, these neocons, the people in the Bush administration, this government in Israel, the Likud. When it comes to policies in Israel, the Likud party, which is Netanyahu, and the present government, there isn't any difference between these people. These two major parties are both warmongering parties, and then you got the Labor Party in there, and Shimon Peres, the president, is sitting there with the Nobel Peace Prize. I was happy to see that Evo Morales, the president of Bolivia, said, how do we get that Nobel Peace Prize back from him? It should be revoked, and I certainly agree with the president of Bolivia.
Well, I do too, Wayne, I'll mention one more thing, and then I'll certainly get off of your show. I enjoyed being on anyway, but
thank you, sir.
I appreciate it. There's one thing I want to say. I don't believe Obama's coming into this presidency on Tuesday with clean hands. I really don't. I think he got the nod, or he gave the nod to go ahead and get this done before the inauguration, and that the Israelis really don't want to stop this. I think they're doing it only because of the new president coming in. But Obama has a very large task ahead of him, and we have the whole world outraged, and the whole world is mad at us, terribly mad.
Right.
And, all it's done is put a big red target on every soldier, Marine, sailor, Coast Guardman, airman we have out there defending our country. And let's pray to God that we don't lose any more lives because of Israel's actions.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And when you look at the people that are coming into the Obama Middle East team, people like Dennis Ross, Dan Kurtzer, former U.S. ambassador to Israel, Rahm Emanuel, who served with the IDF when our men and women were serving with our own military in Saudi Arabia during Desert Storm, and he's serving in the IDF. I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out who's running the show as far as Middle East policy is concerned in the Obama administration. The one guy who was even-handed, had good relations with the Arab countries, we saw him go down just 2 weeks ago. Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, withdrew as his commerce secretary. And I have to believe that, as I mentioned many years ago, I reported this, that his phones were being tapped by the NSA. And if they were being tapped by the NSA, they were also being tapped by these Israeli telecommunications companies that have us completely wired for sound.
Oh, absolutely. They got us wired, and they have for a long, long time. And, you know, you might add one more person in there, soon-to-be Secretary of State, Mrs. Clinton. You know, she wanted to level or destroy Iran. So we've got a tough 4 years ahead of us, Wayne. But anyway, God bless you. Thank you for having me on the air, and much
well,
success.
Well, hope you call in again. Okay, Phil. Thanks for calling in, and we'll hope we can talk about the liberty and the aftermath of that awful attack some more. And I would mention that Cynthia McKinney, after her boat got rammed by the Israelis a few weeks ago, actually mentioned the liberty on CNN. I don't know if you're still with us and you heard that.
Yes, I did.
Oh, yes, okay.
They cut that off.
Oh, they cut her off, but she did get it in the first time. So I know Cynthia; she's a great patriot, and certainly is somebody that will never forget what happened to the USS Liberty.
Okay, Wayne, thanks a lot. I'm out of here.
Okay, great to talk to you, Phil. Let's go to James, who's been holding on from Los Angeles. James, are you with us?
Sure am. Hey, Wayne, it's my good friend Wade Matson, my good friend.
Oh,
Phil,
yes.
My good friend Phil Turney was on, and I couldn't help but catch my friend Rachel mention how you helped me get to the Woodrow Wilson Center that day when I was able to stick it to Hamilton, you know, and that what really motivated the 9/11 hijackers, you two that's over at neoconzionistthreat.com, as she said.
Yes, I just want to mention the fact, not only we know all about NASDAQ and Madoff and all these guys, that question, when I brought up the stock puts on United and American Airlines and Hamilton got all bent out of shape, when even Governor Kane said, I think that's a legitimate issue to be discussed by the commission, and Hamilton was all, and then he got into it with Danny Schechter, if you recall.
Oh, Danny Schechter's a great guy. He's MediaChannel.org, great guy. He's another friend. Listen, I got to get you on my Facebook friend list. I just started that thing, and I got some pretty prominent people on there, and if you're on Facebook too, I'd be honored to add you, you know?
I haven't messed around with this Facebook yet, but I'm being drawn into the world of high tech a little bit more.
Yeah,
each
me
day,
too.
So,
I haven't touched it either. I may have to hit you up after the break here because I've got quite a list of what you've already discussed on the program. I just wanted to address, if I could.
Right.
You talked about Bolivia. That's a very interesting situation. I hadn't heard about that yet. As you know, I've seen you on Press TV often with the American Dream broadcast. I actually got my good friend Dr. Stephen Stagosky on there for his Transparent Cabal book about the neoconservatives. The former CIA operative, Philip Giraldi, who was Ron Paul's foreign policy consultant. He has a nice review of the book over at Amazon.com, and there's more about it at neoconzionistthreat.com as well. But anyway, Francis Boyle is the University of Illinois, international law professor, and he's in the process of putting together a case to be filed at the International Criminal Court against Israel for the war crimes they've been committing in Gaza. And I think that's something that should be made known to Bolivia as well. Maybe they could coordinate on a similar action there. And what's really interesting, you'd mentioned Zippy Livni. You know, her father was Irgun as well. I mean, her father's a terrorist. Here she is calling the
I understand she was Mossad.
Yeah, Mossad as well, exactly. Yeah. And check this one out, Wayne. This is good. This is a kicker. Here we are. Condoleezza Rice gets, you know, snubbed by the Israelis on that UN resolution trying to get a ceasefire when Bush basically gave the order to have to make her file an abstention. And I heard that her, Condi and Zivi Livni were actually having it out. And then here is Zvi Livni coming into the States to sign this memorandum of understanding where we're going to be basically putting engineers on the border with Egypt to prevent the weapons from coming into the tunnels. It's the only weapons the Palestinians have, you know, those crude tunnels. Meanwhile, we're spending billions of dollars arming the Israelis to commit genocide on the Palestinians. And guess what? And here's the kicker that I heard on Press TV, that good old Obama was consulted. So he's quite fine with this, which is just outrageous.
Well, you know, look at the people he surrounded himself with. I mentioned some of these individuals, but he's got the entire, basically, Washington Institute for Near East Policy.
AIPAC, spin-off think tank, exactly. Exactly.
Right.
And then what I wanted to ask you about this person, the NSA. I hear mixed, I talked to him one time, James Jones, General James Jones.
Yes.
And I basically mentioned the 9/11 situation, how we went into Afghanistan because of 9/11. He works over at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in D.C., and he said that he didn't agree with that. And I said, well, go ahead and get a copy of James Banford's A Pretext for War book and look up Israel as a Terrorist Motivation in the Index. And I'm just wondering if it might have rubbed off on him, because apparently, I don't know if you've done any investigation on this, that he has a scathing report about what the Israeli IDF has been doing against the Palestinians. And they've been burying it at the State Department. They've been wanting to make it public, and Condoleezza Rice has been doing everything she can to keep it buried. Have you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't. James, I see we've got a whole lot of people waiting. We've got a short time left, so let me try to get to some of the other callers before we run up on the hour. But it's great to talk to you. Thank you.
Likewise, and I'll always remember how you did the Israeli interrogator story with your Israeli torture template place, and we got it on the BBC win.
Thank you, and we'll be right back after this short break. Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Matson with the Wayne Matson Report. Let's try to get to some of our callers before we run up to the end of the hour. Jeanette from Texas. Jeanette, are you with us?
Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Jeanette.
Yeah, great show as always.
Thank you.
Something just struck me. I was listening to a couple of your callers talking about Rahm Emanuel, you know, that hard-charging ex-ballet dancer.
Right.
Anyway, something occurred to me. Since when did this happen that the president's butler / social secretary, Kate, became so influential in making policy for the United States?
Go ahead.
I mean, I just realized that the guy, that's basically what the chief of staff of the White House is, right?
Well, yeah, he's like the executive secretary. He basically handles the White House staff. He's the guy ultimately in charge of the president's schedule. But yeah, he's a glorified secretary. Yes.
So why does he have any influence over official policy?
Well, he shouldn't, but obviously, we know how powerful this chief of staff position has become over the years. Certainly, it started really with Richard Nixon when Bob Haldeman was his chief of staff, and we've seen some other pretty influential, Don Regan for Ronald Reagan. Of course, he ran afoul of Nancy and got fired, but this glorified secretary position, unfortunately, has become sort of like a prime minister's position, which, of course, we don't have. But in fact, it has become a de facto one. If Joe Biden's going to, like, limit his role as vice president, that tells me that we're going to see a lot more power being exercised from Rahm Emanuel. Unlike presently, where really Cheney calls the shots and the chief of staff, whether it was Andy Card or the present guy, Bolton, haven't had that much influence as some have had in the past.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like the vizier behind the throne. Well, let's hope that Hillary and Rahm kind of cancel each other out, because I understand they hate each other.
Well, I hope so. And and also, Rahm Emanuel and Howard Dean do not like each other, but of course, Howard Dean is gone. So, but maybe it's a fact where old Rahm has created too many enemies. And you know what happens when you get too many enemies in this town? The long knives are drawn, and you've got to watch your back.
That's
but anyway,
right.
thank, Thanks for calling. Thanks for calling in from Texas, Jeanette. We are right up on Maryland. Let's go to Maryland, California, and you'll get the last word before we leave for this week.
Hi, I've never called you before, but I just want to make a quick comment. There's some news articles that I read that say that what they're trying to do is remove Hamas, which actually knows that the Fatah group is pro-American. They want to remove Hamas so they can go ahead and set it up so Obama can set up this Palestinian state
yes.
as soon as he comes in. They're setting it up so he can do great things, you know. And
that's
and,
right. Well, it was George Bush's idea to let them have those elections, and they elected Hamas in the Gaza Strip. But now, of course, well, I guess he didn't mean that kind of democracy.
The Berkeley liberals here, where I am, are all crying out that Obama's screwing up big time. So even
well,
tell him he has an article.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Marilyn, and tell them to stay on Obama's case. That will do it for this week. This is Wayne Matson with the Wayne Matson Report. We will be back with you next week with a new president, President Barack Obama, in the White House. Anyway, thanks for joining us. This is Wayne Matson from Washington, D.C.